The Interpretations Committee and the Emerging Issues Task Force of the FASB received a request to clarify the classification of the liability for prepaid cards issued by a bank in the bank's financial statements and accounting for the unspent balance of the prepaid cards with the following features. There's no expiry date, the card can only be used for purchasing goods or services, and there's no back-end fee or inactive balance charge, which means that the balance on the prepaid card does not reduce unless spent by the cardholder. The Interpretations Committee was asked to consider whether the liability for those prepaid cards is a non-financial liability because the issuing bank does not have an obligation to deliver cash to the cardholder. The submitter thinks that the liability is a non-financial liability because the issuing bank does not have an obligation to deliver cash to the cardholder. Consequently, an issuing entity will be able to apply the guidance in IFRS 15 on customers' unrecognized rights. However, we think that the liability for prepaid cards would meet the definition of a financial liability because the issuing bank has an obligation to deliver cash to the merchant that is conditional upon the cardholder using the prepaid card to purchase goods or services. Consequently, a bank would apply the guidance in IFRS 9 or IAS 39 to derecognize the liability for prepaid cards. After posting the paper, we discussed the issue with three entities based out of the US and Canada and having international operations. These entities are issuers of prepaid cards in some jurisdictions and program managers in other jurisdictions. Based on our discussions with those entities, we understand that the volume and value of these prepaid cards in other jurisdictions is small compared to the US. We also understand that the prepaid cards with no expiry or inactive balance charges are not material to the overall operations, but the market is still growing. Some entities have changed the prepaid card programs to include inactive balance charges because they were unable to derecognize the liability under IFRS 9. The FASB discussed the issue at its agenda prioritization meeting on 5th of November and added the issue to the EITF's agenda. Most members expressed a preference to call it a financial liability, but providing some relief to allow the breakage to be recognized. We think that in the light of the existing guidance in IAS 32 and IFRS 9 or IAS 39, neither an interpretation nor an amendment to the standard is needed. Do you agree with our conclusions?
So we're saying now you... I thought I heard you say that an interpretation was needed. You're saying is not.
No, it's not needed. Sorry.
So my understanding, just to be clear, is that if there are no fees and no expiry date, there's no derecognition.
Yeah.
Okay. Tony?
Maybe ask a question of the staff before we debate the issue, which is, I can think of a range of possible situations, starting with the prepaid cards at one end. And this is a prepaid card that can be used at multiple merchants. So Visa, MasterCard, whatever. If I move it along one notch, I then say, well, what if it's a prepaid card that can only be used at a single merchant? What if I move it along a further notch and say, well, it's a card for which the issuer has to stand ready to issue goods and services or pay a third party, or I move it the whole way to a customer loyalty program where the points may be cashed in with the issuer or with a third party, in which case the issuer has an obligation to pay cash. And do you think that you'd apply the same logic in all of those cases? And if not, what distinguishes it? Because I think IFRS 15 would tell you to do something very different with two, perhaps three of the other cases. And I'm just interested in where you draw the line. So just before we share comments, where would you put the line?
I mean, the fact pattern that you've asked about, if the card can be used for purchasing goods or services from the issuer as well as others, I mean, I would first look at what are the terms and conditions attached to the card. I mean, are there any restrictions that a certain amount has to be used for purchasing goods and services of the issuer and certain amount with the other merchants? If not, then the gating question to me would be, does the issuer have an unconditional right to avoid paying cash?
But if that's the case, Raghav, and this is what I was getting at, before I offer a view on this, is if you say there is an unconditional obligation to avoid paying cash...
Unconditional right to avoid.
Sorry, an unconditional right to avoid paying cash or not. Take a customer loyalty program, where somebody can take their points or whatever they've been given, they can go and cash it in with a third party, it's entirely their decision, in which case the issuer has to pay cash, then if I extend the logic in this agenda decision, you would say you would measure that financial liability without breakage. IFRIC 13 and IFRS 15 would tell you to measure it with breakage. And therefore, I'm just concerned about how we scope this to avoid capturing all sorts of other things.
Our analysis has only focused on a situation where the only outcome is the delivery of cash. We've not extended it to look at other situations where it might be cash, it might be goods and services by the issuer.
I'm not sure that works, though.
No.
The large superstore who will remain nameless, but who sells books and pajamas and shoes and light bulbs, some out of its own warehouses, some out of other people's warehouses, makes it awfully hard to make that line hard, I think.
I mean, we've obviously been looking at some fact patterns submitted to us, which are where the issuer is only responsible for delivering cash because they are a financial institution. And so you've described an additional fact pattern which might be worth looking at as well.
That's a charitable way of dealing with the chairman. Okay.
Andrew?
Yeah, I agree with the staff analysis on this. This particular fact pattern I felt was a financial liability, and the derecognition rules, better or worse, take you where you are, which is no derecognition if there's no expiry date or continuing fee. I mean, I think Tony's comments really say, well, what's the definition of a financial liability versus a performance obligation? And there might be some judgments to be made around that, but this one did seem to fit fairly squarely into financial liability.
Bonnie?
I have to admit that on first reading of this, I thought there was a possibility this could fall into IFRS 15 because I guess it wasn't paragraph 25C of the staff analysis wasn't entirely convincing to me that this wasn't part of the entity's income generating activities. If this is a program that they offer, this is a program that's part of the financial services that they offer to customers, why would this not fall into IFRS 15?
I mean, yep.
I understand there's a different outcome depending on whether you say yes or no to that question, but that's where I got a little bit hung up on this analysis.
I mean, the income that the bank is entitled to for rendering the financial service is probably not the full face value of the card.
If that's classified as part of revenue, then why would that not be applicable under IFRS 15? If that's an other income because it's ancillary too, then maybe I can get to the same conclusion. But that's where I struggled with the analysis, to be honest.
Okay, let's go straight down the line. Tony?
Sorry, my own perspective on it is if you say, as Bonnie just said, that this is a revenue transaction, that the bank is earning a fee for issuing the card, which is then cashed in somewhere else and it's earning a fee. And if I say that's in IFRS 15, then I'd measure it with breakage. And I'm just not sure that I can distinguish this fact pattern from a range of other fact patterns. And I'd be reluctant to finalize the agenda decision in this form because I'm worried about unintended consequences. I think we need to think more carefully, or maybe a bit more, about the consequences for other transactions that we automatically think of in revenue, and we measure the income to include breakage. And if you think about the first TRG meeting, we spent a long time thinking about cards that were sold by one party and could be cashed in with a single merchant. And the entire conversation was focused on IFRS 15. Nobody once mentioned IS 32. Now, I don't disagree with the analysis that you've done. I'm just concerned that there are some unintended consequences here that haven't been bottomed out. Charlotte?
I suppose I came about from the different view. It seemed quite obvious to me, and I would have gone down that scale of everything that Tony said and said, that's a financial liability. I don't distinguish between them. Mm-hmm. And I had come about this problem before in the world of traveller's checks, where traveller's checks that are on issue, which aren't dated, nobody can ever cancel them, and it's, you know, no bank likes that accounting, but that is the accounting. So maybe the solution is to do, and I'm not sure what the EITF is intending to do on breakage, whether they're issuing a specific sort of interpretation of just for, you know, for all of these, or is it just for IFRS 15 scoped in things, or how that's worked, but maybe that's what we need to do to make them consistent.
The EITF are yet to discuss. This is just a preliminary discussion by the FASB last week that have put it onto the EITF's agenda to take a look at.
Okay.
Laurent?
I have similar concerns as Tony, rushing on that one, because you can see that there is a service that is being delivered, and perhaps that service is being delivered to the card scheme provider. Yes, you receive a fee, but you may have actually a valuable fee, because they consider that you may be entitled to that amount of cash that you have received that will never be reclaimed for. So why don't you have an IFRS 15 analysis? So to understand also what type of obligation do you have, and to whom do you have an obligation? So I would not rush with the conclusion that you are proposing. I can read that as well, but I think it's going a little bit too fast. And I completely agree with Tony that you need to have a much broader analysis, not limited to the fact pattern that has been proposed to you, and you need to enlarge to ensure that you will be consistent in treating those card schemes.
Martin?
I ask myself, what is the business model beyond to understand the transaction? And probably if someone pays an amount to a bank which issues then this gift card, then this amount is interest-free for the bank, and therefore the bank more or less has some interest in entering into this transaction. But I'm not sure whether this is the underlying business model. We heard already traveler checks or something like this. For me, something similar is a kind of prepaid credit card. There, the same fact pattern more or less could apply. I have no credit but a debit account and take it out of this. We have to make a clear distinction from customer loyalty cards, which are something completely different, which are much more complicated to account for, I would believe. So here in this specific fact pattern, I see a financial liability if my business model and my understanding is correct, but this then has to be assured.
Bruce?
Yeah, I was just going to share, I mean, some experience we've had. I mean, there's a number of ways these cards can be issued as well. So I guess the first thing I was going to say is, you know, where we've got customer issuing bank card provider scheme, there are various ways these can happen. You can go direct, you can use a PSP, so there's a whole range of things that can come out. I could see how initially when I first read it, I agreed with the analysis. It's cash, but I think then as you unpack it, I think you're 100% right that I think the IFRS 15 issues come into account. And I think that's a challenge, which is why I would say I think we need to do analysis on IFRS 15. I do get concerned that is the same as everybody else, that there are those unintended consequences. I guess the other thing, I mean, I'm assuming this is probably superfluous given where it seems to be going, but on the agenda decision, you know, I always get concerned when we say up front, we've been asked to clarify what is this, and oh, by the way, we're saying it's a financial liability. So that's, I think, the concern I had to that we were jumping in that second last paragraph to a conclusion that I'm not necessarily convinced. I think we've discussed fully.
John?
I mean, I think the conclusion is the appropriate conclusion, but I suppose I am also concerned with this issue of the spectrum. Although Tony Spectrum, you could continue the other direction as well, like the prepaid credit card, and say, does anyone really think that's in revenue or IFRS 15? And the answer you get, say, well, clearly these things are in 9. So somewhere along the spectrum, I think there's IFRS 15 versus IFRS 9. I mean, I look at this and I think it's a financial liability, but I am troubled by the fact that there are very similar types of arrangements in substance, which can be redeemed for cash or can be redeemed at a merchant who then comes to the airline and gets cash, which seem to operate very similar to these, and yet we conclude they're clearly IFRS 15. So I do think some further analysis needs to be done about what differentiates this to make it a financial liability from some of those other types of arrangements where we conclude it's a non-financial liability. I mean, I think this is the appropriate answer. I think these are IFRS 9 liabilities, but I'm just concerned as to what's the basis for making that distinction between the two.
Reinhardt, and then I'll go to the phones.
I agree with the staff's conclusion in these particular circumstances, and I think along the lines of what others are saying, it's really important to make sure that we ring fence the facts and circumstances so that it wouldn't be applied by analogy to other circumstances along that spectrum. So, for example, one thing that's missing, and I found missing in the draft agenda decision, was the obligation of the issuing bank to the acquiring bank. You know, the fact that the issuing bank has to pay cash to the acquiring bank. That's not, although it's discussed in the paper, it's not in the agenda decision, and I think that's important in describing the fact pattern in the agenda decision. And similarly, where we say in the agenda decision it's redeemable for goods or services, it's for goods or services being provided by some other entity, not the issuing bank itself. Again, just to make sure it's clear that this is, we're talking about a situation where the obligation that the issuing bank has is a contractual obligation to pay cash to somebody else, as opposed to providing goods or services, something that might be scoped within IFRS 15.
Okay, let's go to the phones. Fei Long? Okay, again, I think we may have lost Fei Long. Sandy?
Yeah, I guess I read it and was pretty convinced it was a financial liability under IS 39, but listening to the conversation, I think just as John was saying the spectrum, I was thinking, what are all the distinguishing characteristics of these items? And me, I don't, different things have been tossed around, but I don't have that sort of framework set in my mind. So I'm not certain that others won't, others won't understand the specific circumstances which we're talking about, or it won't get extrapolated. So I guess I would be for greater distinction of the different types of instruments, who issues them, and what is given, cash or goods, and by whom, in helping discern the differences.
Okay, I hear a strong, Sue, do you want to jump in on this? Okay, so you can disagree with me? I hear a strong sense that while the conclusion reached here is probably appropriate for the specific situation, that a couple of things work against that. One is that we haven't heard what the EITF has to say. The other is that there is concern about a variety of other apparently similar situations. I heard a couple of people mention the one that concerns me, which is what I would call cross-platform. So I get loyalty points from American Express, but I use them to buy an iPad. How does that fit in? Or I have an integrated retailer who issues one of these through its banking subsidiary here. God knows what else. At the other end, I can't believe we want to revisit the traveler's check issue. That one's been around since Moses was a corporal. And so we're going to have to draw some limits around this one, if that's what we do. Now Sue's going to disagree with me.
I'm not going to disagree with you at all. I think I'm going to vehemently agree with you. But maybe just to add something to it. It seemed to me that the paper, and I agreed with the analysis, was concluding that the accounting followed the fact that it met the definition of a financial liability in IAS 32. Building on that, is what the committee is suggesting needs to be done to look at other sort of known fact patterns to conclude whether or not they also meet the definition of a liability in IAS 32, so to sort of flesh out the analysis a bit? Is that basically what you're asking?
I absolutely don't disagree that there is a financial liability, and there might be a financial liability in a lot of the other arrangements that we've talked about. It's almost an ordering question that gets to measurement. So let's use this fact pattern and just think about it two ways. Firstly, the way the staff have done the analysis, you get to a financial liability and you don't take into account potential breakage. If you were to say, then we'll do the analysis in IFRS 15, it still throws out a financial liability because you've got to pay the counterparty. But if you went through IFRS 15 first, you'd say, well, let's measure the revenue component of this transaction. And you'd measure that including breakage. And in this case, the bank is acting as an agent. And you'd say, well, the agent therefore owes the amount that it has to pass through. That's still a contractual obligation to pay cash.
That is a which standard do I apply first question, and therefore which scope do I fall into question, slightly different.
But I do think that is the question. It is which standard do
I get into. That's good to clarify so that they know what to look at.
Okay, let's not all jump in here. Staff.
Yeah, but when measuring the revenue component in the transaction, do I consider breakages as revenue for the service which the bank is rendering? Or would the revenue that the bank is earning is just the interchange fee?
That's the question. Do you have variable payments with, and your contract may just consider that indeed you have a fixed fee, but you're entitled to variable payments linked to the fact that some of those payments that will be made will never be recovered, and it's your remuneration as part of the contract as well.
And then further distinction between customer loyalty, I mean the other end of the spectrum that we're talking about, and this fact pattern, would that also make a difference that in the case of customer loyalty programs, for the holder of those points, is that a financial asset or not? Because I think in this fact pattern, what we analyzed is that these prepaid cards is creating a financial liability for the bank and a financial asset for the holder. So which makes it a financial instrument within the scope of IAS 32. But for IFRS 15, a financial instrument is excluded out of the scope of IFRS 15.
Well, time out.
So
the financial instrument is, but in certain circumstances, you pass through IFRS 15 on the way to having a financial instrument. So if I sell you a car and finance it, I got to go through 15 first, and then I create a financial instrument. So it's only when I create a freestanding financial instrument or a non-sequential that I get out of 15, I think. Am I correct in that? Yeah. So I didn't mean, I was sounding didactic there, and I didn't mean to. Okay, does the staff have sufficient guidance? Be a nice touch, wouldn't it? Okay.